The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So I was reflecting on the fact that this is kind of a time of intentions, being the beginning of the year. And I wondered about, you know, what would be helpful to share on a day like today. And I just waited, and eventually some verses from the suttas came to mind. So I thought, okay, I'll try to talk a little bit about this, about something that seems to be meaningful here. So from the Anguttara Nikaya, there's these couple of phrases. The Buddha says, "Monks, I know not of any other single thing that brings such woe as the mind that is untamed, uncontrolled, unguarded, and unrestrained. Such a mind indeed brings great woe. Monks, I know of no other single thing that brings such bliss as the mind that is tamed, controlled, guarded, and restrained. Such a mind indeed brings great bliss." And it's said maybe a little bit more concretely or directly in the Dhammapada. Something similar is said in these phrases. "Whatever an enemy may do to an enemy, or haters to one another, far worse is the harm from one's own wrongly directed mind. And then, neither mother nor father, nor any relative, can do one as much good as one's own well-directed mind." So, what does this mean, the well-directed mind? That phrase kind of caught in my mind. So what is being pointed to here, and how can it be developed and help us in this coming year? So, in one way, the well-directed mind is pretty straightforward. Consider an innocent common activity that we do, like, say, going to the grocery store. We could go there with our list all written out and a mind focused on getting everything on that list as fast as possible, and despite the obstacle of there being so many other people in the store. You know, that's kind of our mind when we're in the store. It's just go here, go there, get this. Oh no, there's such a long line at the check stand, etc. And everything that we're seeing is directed somehow toward this goal of getting what's on the list. Or we could do the same thing, go to the store, maybe even have a list, but we do so with the idea of being at ease in some way and connecting with the people that we see in some way. Maybe making some effort for their shopping trip to also be a little bit more easeful by, I don't know, sliding our cart out of the way as we see somebody else approaching the oranges to make it easier for them to arrive there. It's a small thing, but we probably wouldn't have done it if we hadn't had our mind interested in doing something like that. So surely the mind is more well-directed in the second case than in the first case. Or consider a normal occurrence like having a cold. We could sit at home and stew about how we're not getting our work done and how stuff like this always happens to us, blah, blah, blah. Or maybe we'd even make everybody else in the house miserable too through this process. Or we could relax and drink a lot of tea and be patient. We could gracefully accept help from our partner and make them feel good about being able to help us. And we can practice being kind to our body and mind in a time when it's not aligned, not strong in some way. So I think this points toward what the Buddha said when he said before he was enlightened, he noticed that his mind had two kinds of thoughts. Some were helpful and some were not so helpful. And he got astute at noticing which thoughts were wholesome and which were unwholesome and which were going to lead toward suffering and which ones away from suffering. And he kind of made a catalog and realized that it was more beneficial to direct the mind toward these helpful thoughts, which are then the seeds, of course, for our speech and our actions. So a well-directed mind is one with thoughts of kindness and compassion and harmony. This is kind of the bright karma, the good karma that we can generate. But it's also true that we could get the impression just from that teaching that the Buddha was sort of telling us what kinds of thoughts or experiences to have. You know, if your mind is in this good state of having compassion and loving kindness, then that's the right thing. That's the right way to be. And we're the right kind of practitioner when our mind is like that. And if it isn't, there's something wrong. We might think he was talking about the content of our mind as being the only thing that's important. And so in one way he was. Of course, a mind that's filled with loving kindness is a wonderful thing. But our mind is not always filled with loving kindness, is it? So I think he wasn't saying that we have to, you know, only count those states as the ones that are somehow worthy of our practice. I think he was also aiming towards something subtler and deeper when he talked about the well-trained mind. Not so much necessarily the thoughts and feelings themselves, although those are important, but our relationship to them also. So another view of the well-directed mind is that it's a mind that does not cling. So we can look a little bit more deeply at our mind and observe how we know things, how we are in relationship, the characteristic of our knowing or awareness. So, for example, tightly gripping on to the things that we know is not very nourishing. Whereas, you know, whether that grip is wanting them or the grip of, quote-unquote, grip of pushing them away, you know, having some kind of a clear desire, you know, for or against what we're experiencing. And in contrast, open, relaxed knowing feels much more nourishing. We can notice that in our own mind and body. So even if what we're looking at is something unpleasant, maybe it's an unpleasant physical experience, but maybe it's something unpleasant in our mind. We're having some awful thought, or we're having some really not very helpful mind state, confusion, fear, anger. Something is arising in our mind. Even if we're looking at that, we can do so in a way that is relaxed and open, and that is nourishing. Even if what we're looking at is clinging of some kind. Oh, there's clinging arising in my mind. Proof that I'm not the Buddha yet. But nonetheless, at that moment, we can be nourished by holding it in open awareness. We can relate to clinging in a non-clinging way. So suppose our mind is filled with anger, boredom, fear, desire. One option is to think that this is bad and ill-directed and try to replace the thoughts and feelings with something more wholesome. And that kind of practice is recommended. But I wonder also if there's a way that we can simply recognize anger and boredom and so forth in a way that's supportive and not tinged with suffering itself, not adding more suffering onto that. And interestingly, there is some support for this in many various Buddhist traditions. I have a couple of quotes. One is from Suzuki Roshi, who says concisely, "We have just the right number of problems, not too many and not too few." So I think he's pointing toward the acknowledgement that we have problems in our life and in our mind, and that they're not entirely wrong to have. And so what might he mean? You know, this is a little cryptic Zen statement, we have just the right number. But there's also a both Tibetan Buddhist prayer and Thai, there's actually a prayer to have certain kinds of problems in our practice along our path. I couldn't find the text for the Thai one, but I found a Tibetan one that says, "Grant that I may be given appropriate difficulties and sufferings on this journey so that my heart may be truly awakened and my practice of liberation and universal compassion may be truly fulfilled." How's that for a New Year's wish? May I have appropriate difficulties and sufferings on this journey. I like that because it implies that there's something appropriate, right? So it's actually pretty easy to understand when you hear it in this light way, right? If we're rowing, say we're rowing our boat across a lake, we might wish, of course, for sunny weather and no waves, and we'll just get there. That's great. And if that happens, that's great. That's fine. But the rower who encounters a storm while crossing the lake is probably going to get stronger, and they're going to have to learn a lot more about boatsmanship, is that a word, than somebody who didn't get tested in that way, if you will. Especially if the person learns to relax into awareness with the storm and kind of rock back and forth with it and doesn't get all caught up and angry and afraid and why is this happening. So be it storm or calm, learning to hold everything in open awareness. If it's only calm, we might not be sure about whether or not we can do the storm. Yeah, so we have to have a few storms. So the question for our practice maybe is, can we find that nourishing feeling in any moment, whatever our mind is doing, the nourishment of awareness, regardless of what we're aware of, the joy of knowing, the peace of knowing. And we can begin to glimpse, at least intellectually, that this is a way that we can find freedom in any kind of circumstance. So open-mindedness, open-heartedness, the intention to let go or relinquish. So all of these intentions can serve us in the coming year. And so I wish for you in 2014 that your difficulties may be appropriate and your mind well-directed. Thank you. Mm-hmm.